if you're missing the why, then you sort of are missing that emotional piece. And people lead with their emotions. They make decisions with their emotions, and they want to feel like something really speaks to them. That's why we really focus in that area. And so much of creativity is tapping into the why, pulling on the heartstrings, resonating with people and hitting them really with a message that they're going to understand. And that feels like this person gets me when this person gets my life and my situation.
Hello. This is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. I had a good conversation with Rachel Rennick and Claire Humphreys about their firm Wethos, which facilitates the quick formation of teams of freelance creative talent to help progressive organizations market themselves. Rachel and Claire left the world of big advertising agencies and large clients and founded Wethos, raising millions of dollars to build enabling technology and a forward-looking firm with an ambitious vision for how to scale it. I wanted to talk to Rachel and Claire because they are another good example of progressive political entrepreneurship, and they appear to be onto something. The episode is worth your listen. After a quick word from our sponsor, my interview with Rachel Rennick and Claire Humphreys of Wethos.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from Timeplots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. Timeplots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Hi, Rachel and Claire.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello.
Good. Would you guys each mind introducing yourself, giving me a quick biography, and talking about what you're up to together?
Sure, no problem. I'm Rachel Rennick. I'm a co-founder and the CEO of a company called Wethos. Wethos is a platform that creates creative and marketing teams that are highly specialized for nonprofit and political organizations. We also work across a couple of different progressive campaigns and with a bunch of different progressive organizations to help sort of combat voter suppression. We've done a lot of awareness campaigns. We've done a lot of petitions. And really what we do is just form these custom teams of people all across the U.S. who can sort of join in on the conversation and help organizations raise awareness and spread the word about the initiatives that they're working on and help progressive political organizations win in the upcoming election.
Rachel, could you tackle a little more biography? Where did you grow up and what was your path to starting this?
Sure. Yeah. So Claire and I co-founded the company back in 2016, and we worked in advertising together. So I actually grew up in Syracuse, New York, and I went to Syracuse University for communications design. And from there, I came straight to New York and joined a large advertising firm. I was working on big brands like CoverGirl and Hershey as an art director. So I was shooting commercials and doing a lot of social and digital campaigns for those big brands. And Claire and I worked together on the Hershey's account. And back in 2016, we decided to team up together to start Wethos, predominantly at sort of the height of the 2016 election. There's a lot of political madness. I personally felt that as I was freelancing on the side for a lot of nonprofit organizations, that they really didn't have access to the right resources in order to be able to get some of this stuff done. So knowing that we had this big network of creative people who wanted to, you know, do more meaningful work, we decided to create Wethos platform, which would create teams for these organizations. And Claire, I'm happy to hear a little bit from you and sort of your background story. I know mine comes directly from working with the nonprofit organizations, but I know that your take is actually a little bit different.
Yeah. So I'm Claire Humphreys. I'm one of the co-founders and the chief innovation officer at Wethos. My background's a little bit different. So I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Missouri, what used to be a purple state, but now leans very red. And I ended up in Chicago and then in New York to work in advertising, working at Havas and then at 360i. I switched over to 360i because I wanted to do some more CSR-esque advertising initiatives. And that's where I was working with Toyota on their CSR brands. And honestly, just didn't feel like it was enough. I didn't feel like it was impactful in terms of kind of the greater good of what we were doing in the nonprofit and social impact space. And it's kind of funny when you think about when we started Wethos, maybe it was because we were in a New York bubble, but we didn't even think that the 2016 election would turn out the way that it turned out. I think I had a celebratory party with my friends getting ready for the first woman president to come in. And, you know, we had started Wethos a few months before. And of course, we all know what happened in history in the 2016 elections where Trump became president. And it was a really devastating day, I think, for us personally. But it was really interesting to see what happened with Wethos is we had thousands of freelancers pouring in, wanting to make an impact, make a difference and work for causes and campaigns that they cared about that, you know, no one may have been even thinking about before because it wasn't even a part of our reality that Trump would have won the election and all of the chaos that has happened in the past few years happened. But it has kind of propelled Wethos to the idea that we had originally of wanting to connect freelancers with the nonprofit space to, hey, we need to make a bigger impact here. Let's connect it with the whole progressive political space, nonprofit space, and innovators in the space.
And now you, as I understand it, actually decided to raise money and start the company, which is not that common for sort of an agency. Talk about that decision and how hard that was and why you felt that you wanted to have money in the bank as you got going.
We've raised $4.6 million in venture capital since 2017, so about in the last two or so years. And one of the biggest things is that we're not a traditional agency. So when we left advertising, one thing that we really wanted to do was focus on scale. And it's not enough, or it wasn't enough for us to just create one agency that would service a limited amount of organizations. We wanted to be able to create hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of teams that we could deploy across organizations across the US. And that required a technology platform. So we actually are a tech company behind the scenes. What we do is we curate teams for organizations and we use our own technology to do so. And so when we went out to raise funding, it was really because, to Claire's point, in the 2016 elections, we saw such an influx of growth. Because the people that were out protesting in the streets and still are were designers and developers and writers. And they wanted to have sort of an actionable way to do something meaningful and to do something that was going to combat what was happening in the political space. So we raised money back in 2017 and we raised two rounds of funding so far. We actually just recently closed a $3 million round of funding in June of this year. And really, it was because we wanted to invest heavily in the technology platform that we've built out so that we could deploy a large volume of teams across organizations. So right now, we deploy anywhere from 15 to 20 teams a month, and our in-house staff is about 16 or so people. So you can kind of see the difference there in terms of scale from a normal agency versus Wethos, which is really a platform, and we like to say that our teams are sort of like micro-agencies or pop-up departments, and that's kind of how we view it.
It's not that common to have that sort of ambition for that kind of scale in the space in a startup. Where's that coming from?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Claire and I are sort of naturally ambitious people. We are definitely just that sort of personality type in terms of, I remember working with Claire and thinking like, God, this woman is just so smart and is so ahead of things. And I didn't necessarily feel that we were getting the opportunities that we needed or wanted in those large agencies. So when we left, you know, it was one of those feelings of like, I think I can just do this better. And when we started to build out the platform and the idea and the market size, I think one of the biggest things that drove us is really the core mission of the company, which is that we believe that people solving our toughest problems deserve the best talent. And when I worked with nonprofits and I was freelancing, the thing that frustrated me the most was these people are trying to tackle the hardest issues facing society today. They're trying to fix poverty and hunger and homelessness. And yet we sit here and we tell nonprofit organizations how to spend their money, how much of their money they're allowed to spend, and they're underfunded and under-resourced. And so we have this issue where we're barely moving the poverty line. And we've got 1.5 million nonprofit organizations in the US many of whom are working on really, really complex, deep issues, and they're heavily restricted in what they're able to do. So it just didn't make sense to us. And we always thought that, you know, look, like, Weathos isn't going to change the world. We don't really buy into that kind of tech sort of jargon. But what we do believe is that if we can flood the nonprofit space and the political space with the proper resources that they need to really take action and do these things from a communication standpoint, then, you know, we sort of ask ourselves, like, what kind of world will we be looking at? And that's where the ambition really comes from. It comes from the deep desire to see some of these problems get solved and to give more research, put more resources into the hands of the organizations who are already tackling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, to build on that, if you think about the flip side, you have so many incredibly creative and talented people in the agency world. And then, you know, they figure out, they come in the office on Monday and they're working on a cigarette brand that's not aligned with their values. They dread coming into work every day. This is just such a waste of really, really amazing talent. And it's also kind of the only option. If you went to creative school, you're either in advertising or you are a starving artist out there. So how can we also create a world where it's more equitable to go off and be a freelancer in the way that you have control over your own schedules, control over who you're working for, and actually being able to work on projects that you're passionate about? The work is far and beyond what we're seeing being done at agencies and what we're seeing on Weathos, because it's actually work that these people are truly, truly passionate about. It's meaningful to them. The community and the changing and the way that the future of work is happening, where more and more people are going off on their own or taking up freelance, is just something that we wanted to make sure was also open for the nonprofit and progressive political world. Because at the end of the day, every campaign and every organization is only as good as their people. And if we can connect these people with the top creative directors around the world, instead of the creative director spending their time with Hershey, they're spending their time with a really incredibly important campaign or organization in a small town in Missouri, then the impact could be just endless.
What do you think that you learned in the big agency world in working for these big brands that is valuable to bring into the nonprofit and mission and political space?
One thing that we definitely see is that the people inside of agencies are absolutely incredible. And a lot of times the sort of traditional or legacy agency structure is just not setting those people up for success. And the thing that I think, you know, the creative talent in that world does really well is they have a good understanding of why people should care about the thing that they're making or the thing that they're selling. And I think one of the sort of traps that a lot of organizations fall into is they tend to come from heavier backgrounds around policy or legal, and they have incredible strategic chops in terms of how to literally solve these problems, what kinds of programs to run, what kinds of sort of resources they need for those programs. But a lot of times the struggle, and I think even not just nonprofits, but organizations in general, companies and everything, when you're a little bit too close to it, you have a hard time communicating it clearly. And so I think what we really bring to the table from a creative side is the why. Whereas a lot of organizations tend to heavily focus more on the what and the how. And those things are extremely important. But in order to really create a movement or get people involved, you have to be able to tap into this idea about, like, why should I care? What is this? What about this is something that people are going to resonate with? And I think that's what a lot of branding and marketing in the sort of traditional agency world does really well, is they find that sort of key insight. They're able to tap into it emotionally, and they're able to get people to listen and engage with them in a way that's visual, in a way that's engaging, in a way that is really going to help them sort of relate to whatever it is that they're trying to put out there. So that tends to be where we have that strength. And I think it's just taking these really complex and important issues and breaking them down in a way where the everyday person can understand it and understand how they play a role in that.
There's already a ton of agencies of various sizes that concentrate on the same space that you've come after. And in fact, I've also interviewed The Collective Agency, another startup that came out, which was a network of progressive creatives, and there's networks of progressive technologists. What do you think is making you different than what's out there? And obviously, it seems to be finding a market for what you do.
We encourage competition. The more people out there building things made for the progressive political space, kudos to you. That is amazing. We want more technology to be built for this sector because that's good for the world, right? The difference between us and a typical agency is really where it comes down to the team curation. So you imagine you're working with an agency, you know, they have 50 people in house and five of them are designers, and you know you're going to work with one of those designers. They have a specific look and feel. And of course, they've been, you know, working there for years, so have done a ton of campaigns. So maybe even losing that creativity a little bit. We have just been really, really fortunate to have thousands and thousands of specialists of the top agencies around the world that sign up, that we get to kind of pick and choose who is great for the Lauren Underwood campaign, who would be great for the leadership conference campaign. Okay, let's really figure out how we can just push all of these organizations and these campaigns as creatively from a design and strategic perspective as possible. So it's not like you're just getting the same thing over and over. It's just complete diversity and creativity in the way that our teams operate. And it's the products that speak for themselves here. You know, you're getting a team for Lauren Underwood that is in Illinois, and they understand the constituents there, and they understand the look and feel that the team is looking for. And they're really thinking creatively on their own rather than a rinse and repeat strategy that a lot of other agencies approach projects with.
Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, on the curation piece, we've gotten really, really specific in that area, to Claire's point, you know, Lauren Underwood's team being in Illinois. We've done stuff like combating voter suppression in specific counties in Florida where they didn't want to put out Spanish ballots for the 2018 elections. And so we sourced a team in Florida who were native Spanish speakers, design, mm-hmm. copy strategy.
So and they cool. Were able to it was get awesome.
That. Yeah, they were able to get that campaign running, up and running in a rapid response kind of way. And so because of the technology that we've built, we're able to source the exact right people for the team and the work at hand, all the way down to location, languages you speak, skill sets you have, where you're from, what you're passionate about. And we're able to pair those together. And then leveraging that technology, the teams are able to come together in as little as 72 hours. So they're very much rapid response. And, you know, a lot of times the strategy, and that ballot example is the perfect example. A lot of times the strategy against progressives is to just blindside us and like rip the rug out from under us. And so many times the government will do things like that weeks before an election. And we have to be able to bring human teams together at 100 times the speed that we do today, because the world is just moving exponentially faster and the digital landscape is rapidly evolving. And so that curation piece and the rapid response ability when we need to has been really, really just stood out, I think, amongst a lot of the other options that are out there. And to Claire's point, different creative minds are coming around the table, and we have a really heavy focus on diversity of the freelance force. So there are 65% women, 30% people of color, 30% part of the LGBTQ community. And we focus on diversity, frankly, because they are better. The more diverse the team is, the better it is. And the more perspectives that are at that table, and the stronger they become, and they don't miss things. It's really about making sure that we're able to continue to do that across every single team. And again, sort of reach that scale that goes far beyond what a traditional agency can do.
Can you explain this platform, the tech that you're developing?
Sure. Yeah. So the Wethos platform we use internally. We're actually building a few features that we're going to be releasing externally over the next year or so. But basically, the platform has two core pieces that enable us to move really fast and curate these teams. The first piece is being able to build and price complex work really quickly. So we have a scoping and pricing engine that enables us to scope complex work in as little as an hour, where a lot of creating proposals for complicated campaigns like this can take days, if not weeks. And so that's sort of the first piece that enables us to move really quickly and standardize our pricing so that everything is really transparent and clear. So again, you know, you really are getting a breakdown of exactly what's going to go into the work. And then the second piece that we've built is a resourcing engine. So we have a database of about 4,000 specialists across the U.S. We're in 48 states, and our database is able to make recommendations for teammates based on inputs that we give it. So based on the scope of work, the sort of briefing information, you know, where is it? What kinds of roles do we need? What kind of background are we looking for? Skill sets. And the system is able to recommend available people to put onto teams really quickly. So we're able to curate that team really fast, get their, you know, hand raised in terms of, yes, I'm available. And then we have a whole process around onboarding quickly, briefing, contract signing, and then kicking off, as well as collaborative software that enables us to manage these teams remotely. So each team comes with a team lead, and that team lead is tech enabled by the Weethos platform and enables them to juggle anywhere from 10 to 20 teams alone. So that's just a lot of things like, you know, actually it's a lot of administrative stuff that tends to pile up during the day to day. So stuff that enables us to collaborate, like communication and file sharing and tracking feedback and all these other little tools that we use internally. And, you know, the new round of funding that we raised is going very heavily towards continuing to build out that platform and more features for our internal team in hopes that we will eventually externalize that so that people can actually tap into it and potentially someday having specialists connect on their own and form their own micro agencies. So that's sort of how we function kind of behind the curtain.
You found your funding from a pretty good list of different firms. One, you actually came to my attention because of Higher Ground Labs, which has been funding people in the progressive tech space. Why are they funding you? What is it about what you're doing you think that's a fit for the progressive ecosystem?
One of the biggest challenges right now is this sort of giant communications war we're in the digital landscape. And, you know, we're all talking about misinformation and troll farms and amplification networks and grassroots organizing and movements. And one thing the Republican Party does really well is they are able to amplify their message very quickly and very clearly across thousands and thousands of different platforms and accounts. And they're actually outspending Democrats in digital by 4 times the amount. So with us, one of the biggest challenges for a lot of campaigns and progressive organizations is keeping up with the amount of content creation and channels and media and all of the things that need to sort of go into communications today. It's no longer enough to just run a TV ad. I mean, the average American is on 7 different social media platforms, and they're being inundated sometimes with upwards of like 10,000 digital ads a day. 69% of them are on social media. So when we think about that, communications has dramatically changed and rapidly evolved in the last 10 years. And the agency model has to rapidly evolve with it. And a lot of agencies are struggling right now because they're unable to keep their overhead low enough to be able to create this amount of content and keep up with this kind of stuff. So what we can do and why a lot of these investors are interested in what we're doing is the technology that we've built enables us to create micro agencies really quickly and curate those teams of people who understand this digital landscape. And particularly with progressive political orgs and campaigns, the ability to respond to the changing news cycle, or the ability to have a brand that is sort of consumer feeling and, you know, really resonates with a younger voting audience is really, really important. You just can't go without it. Every campaign needs a website. They need social media channels. They need the ability to fundraise. They need a brand. That's what people expect now. So our ability to sort of deploy the level of talent and resources across a large scale is something that is a really huge issue, particularly in a campaign sort of environment, because campaigns tend to pop up for a set period of time, and they're not necessarily organizations that stay alive for a long period. So our model works really well in that regard. And alongside the technology that they're using around AI to combat a lot of the deep fakes and misinformation and troll farms and all these other things is all amazing and great, but we also need the creative talent on top of that. And so it's sort of the perfect pairing. And that's how a lot of the more impact and political investors see this in terms of having an advantage for the 2020 elections.
It's not always been the case that people coming from outside the political arena have been that successful in helping people create brands or messaging in the political arena. How do you think you're able to enter that with the kind of people that you're finding in the creative world and be successful?
When we first started kind of knocking on the doors of progressive political campaigns a few years back, we were turned away. Oh, you know, you all are from the advertising world. You're working on large brands. You don't understand the space. We do direct mail. And we were a little bit like, well, okay, let's look at what has been happening in the past. You can see that the Trump campaign took a totally different approach in the way that they were prioritizing digital and content creation, as did, you know, the Obama campaign, which was incredibly successful, took a digital first approach. Why not bring in outsiders that have been able to succeed in various markets to come in with new creative ideas of how to reach these people? If we keep relying on the same archaic systems that we have been using for decades in the political space, particularly the progressive political space, it kind of speaks exactly against what progressives stand for, right? If you're going to be constantly innovating and standing for kind of the latest and greatest, why not bring in experts with a different point of view, with a different creative mindset and strategic initiatives to come in with new ideas to say, hey, I know you guys have been trying this. Let's try a different approach here. This new way of reaching people through the kind of constant up and coming platforms through social media is something that we should be considering. It's not something that we should just push away to say, hey, direct mail's worked for us in the past. We should keep working, you know, with that system, because at the end of the day, we know that that doesn't work and we need creativity in the market in order to succeed as a progressive sector.
I mean, there's already lots of political digital consultants. It's not that the only people operating in the space were in some kind of completely retrograde fashion. Can you give me an example or two of a campaign that you're very proud of, that where you think that your team's brought something new to a candidate or an organization?
We're not trying to say that like we're coming in and we know everything and listen to us. And in fact, it's the sort of exact opposite of that. And a lot of what we did early on was we just went on a big listening tour and we just heard from the organizations like, okay, tell us about what some of your issues are. Tell us what your frustrations are, what's keeping you up at night. And, you know, their answers were very much in line with, I don't know how I'm going to keep up with all of the stuff that needs to happen in digital. And, you know, digital, there are many digital consultants out there and they're also doing a lot of hard work, but we need more than one person. And one individual can only do so much, especially when it comes to execution. So with All Voting is Local, that organization came to us because they were combating voter suppression. And one of the things that was happening with the 2016 elections was they were shutting down a lot of polling stations, and that was creating a lot of really long lines in very targeted counties so that people would either be turned away and not be able to vote, or the lines were really long, or they couldn't take the time off of work, or they couldn't get to that polling station. And so one of the ways that this organization came up with to solve this issue was just to recruit everyday citizens to work in these polling stations. That's obviously not the sexiest job, right? And they came to us because they knew that this would have an impact, but how do you get the average American who might be disconnected or disengaged to spend their day working in a polling station, keeping lines moving, handing out voting stickers, making sure people had their ballots, making sure everything was running smoothly, so on and so forth. And so we ran a campaign and it was across bus stops and billboards. We did radio ads. It was on social media, through Instagram, stories, Twitter, Facebook, you know, pretty much everything you can imagine, total 360 campaign, everything short of a full TV production. And that campaign was highly visual. It used big headlines, like there was a time when some people weren't even allowed to vote. It was 2016. Just really reaching those everyday Americans, encouraging them to be the difference between, you know, democracy and dysfunction. And the way that we're able to take something that is maybe not the sexiest thing, like, hey, come work in a polling station, and turn it into some creative messaging and visuals that are highly targeted in specific counties and also are engaging and speak to an audience, is definitely what we bring to the table there. And so for us, you know, we're not the ones who are solving these problems. The organizations wholeheartedly are solving the problem. We are just helping them better communicate that out to a larger audience so that they can reach people, get better engagement, and really get the sort of support and the resources they need for some of these super, super important initiatives.
My guess is that a group like All Voting is Local has way fewer marketing resources than, say, Hershey that you worked with before. And that creates often a difficulty in bringing enough talent to a project that there isn't money to fund? How are you making your business successful by charging enough and keeping your clients and being able to provide service to the people that you want to, who may not be that well funded?
If you think about what you're paying for at a typical agency, you know, they have an office space, they have, you know, pretty extensive infrastructure. And how we figured out a way to cut costs is really with our overhead. So we are fully remote. Our specialists are US based only, but they're all over the country. And that helps with the diversification for how we can actually curate those teams based on location as well. But it does also bring down our overhead costs. So us putting together this campaign for All Voting is Local probably cost, I would say, a fourth of what an agency would have charged for this type of thing, because we were able to be really lean in our processes. Plus, because it's enabled by technology, we're able to cut a bunch of time down that would typically take to scope this out, pitch this work, to put together the team, to project manage it. Thanks to the technology that we're building and the future of work of more people working remotely and freelance, we're able to keep costs low, but still get the same quality product, if not higher quality, because you're actually connecting people with work they're passionate about.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is that a lot of our specialists, they're not just working on Wethos or with Wethos. They work across a bunch of different things in their own lives. And so they're really working with us because we're the place where they are getting in to tap into that more meaningful work. And so because these project-based initiatives come together quickly and people aren't entirely dependent on that project to create a cost of living for themselves, it creates a much better model in terms of being able to get these organizations the talent that they need. Now, that said, like, we have a proprietary pricing system and our freelancers are per project earning thousands of dollars. So because we are somewhere in between sort of like a freelance platform and an agency, our contract sizes tend to lean more on the agency side. And therefore, because we're not sucking up a lot of those dollars with our overhead and with the, you know, all the infrastructure that a traditional agency has, more of that money is going into the freelancers' pockets. And so they're able to earn more with us because they're teaming up together on projects that are larger than what they might get alone, or more money than they might take away working for a traditional agency, just because that agency has to mark up their rates so much higher. So that's how we have solved to sort of like keep those costs low and enable a large progressive space to tap into this talent who wants to do more meaningful work. But we've found in the past that like pro bono is just not something that works really well at scale, just because people's priorities tend to shift. And so we think people should be compensated and compensated fairly for their work. And I think that this actually points to a much larger systemic issue where we are setting up the nonprofit space to fail because of the way that we restrict their funding. So to me, it's we're sort of wiggling around that to make sure that we're able to let these organizations tap into these resources. But to me, the larger conversation here is about how we can put more unrestricted money into the nonprofit space, how we can trust a space of that is made up of 74% women more to spend their money in the way that they see fit, and to give them more freedom so that they can be more successful and they can innovate and they can take more risks. And that, to me, points to just a larger sort of systemic conversation. And we're really just one drop in the bucket when it comes to the things that organizations need to succeed.
How do you decide what clients you would take on and what you might feel their mission was not a good fit for yours?
Yeah, so we have sort of three major principles that we tend to stick to. And the one major one that pertains to this is we work with organizations who aim to push us towards a more equitable world. So if you are moving the world forward and you are making the world more equitable for people, then that is an organization that we are wanting to work with. We don't work with quote-unquote Republican organizations, but at the end of the day, one of the principles we like to follow is to side with what's right, not who. And so for us, it's not about blue and red and those types of things. It's about what exactly is the core mission of this organization and what are they trying to do. And if a Republican campaign was going to fight for LGBT rights and equality and pushing the world forward and combat police brutality and all of the systematic injustices that are going on in the world, then we are happy to work with them. But a lot of them are not. So we tend to lean more progressive, and it's because we have values that are progressive that want to push us towards a more equitable world. To us, it's not necessarily about left and right. And that's kind of the lens that we look at a lot of these organizations through. And, you know, we've worked with some conservative leaning organizations who really care about the environment and who are fighting for the earth and
keep America beautiful.
Yeah. The different areas of sort of like the environmental battle, and a lot of them care a lot about those things. And so for us, again, I think this sort of divisiveness around like red or blue, it matters, but at the same time, we're focused more on, are these people, do they have values that align with ours? Are they trying to make a more equitable world? And if so, then we are happy to help them in that fight.
You mentioned Lauren Underwood. Have you found your way into statewide or presidential campaigns at all?
So we're working with the Lauren Underwood campaign, and we actually just launched an e-commerce site for her and a bunch of merch we designed. We also gave her a little bit of a brand refresh, which was really great. And their team was just incredible to work with. And we're starting to sort of dip our toes in that area. So we, you know, we've been talking to the DNC and the DCCC and a bunch of these sort of Democratic committees in this area to try to get into more of these campaigns. Our ideal scenario, actually, though, is really to work with the campaigns that are more local, more grassroots, that are actually going to affect specific counties that are going to then swing specific states. And we know that those things are really going to make an impact. And although, you know, we would love to work on a presidential campaign, and there's no way we would necessarily turn that down, we definitely are wanting to make an impact at a local level, because we know that that is the kind of thing that is really going to change things on a larger level. That's sort of what we're focused on, is kind of the thousands of grassroots campaigns that are going on across the country, and helping those candidates who really don't have access to things get a website up and running, get some assets up and running, make sure that the events they're doing or the speeches they're giving or anything that they're sort of creating, their policies, are able to be communicated out effectively so that people can understand and they know who they're voting for, and then they can get out and vote.
Well, what's the business model? Is it just a markup over your workers are making, or how do you handle that?
Oh, you're going to get us started on points. Rachel, I love points. we had a bit of a crazy work session around this time last year where we just were looking at typical business models in the agency space, and you feel a little bit crazy when you're dealing with hours. Like, okay, this person's this hourly rate and it was taking them this hours, but this person with a higher hourly rate took less hours, and how is this all fair? And are we just chaining people to their desks?
And billing by the hour, I think, too, it sort of fundamentally breaks a little bit, because you're not incentivizing efficiency at all. And so when you have an amazing expert who has spent 10 years, you know, honing in on a craft that enables them to do a task in 30 minutes that might take somebody else 3 hours to do, they're actually getting penalized when you bill on an hourly rate. And from an agency perspective, you know, the more hours you bill, the more money you make. And so you're just not necessarily incentivized to really move quickly and be efficient with your time and optimize for that. We transition to points, and Claire,
we've spent a lot of time with the data and points. And yeah, so basically, when you think about points, it's just really tying a value or really a flat rate to a deliverable. So it's incredibly clear when you're seeing our scopes of work of this is what you're getting, the deliverables you'll be receiving. So it's really transparent for both sides, both the clients and the specialists, to know exactly what they're going to be receiving and then the value of that deliverable, which we're not, you know, basing on time alone. It's based on expertise. It's based on the complexities. It's based on the uncertainties. And there's a ton of different inputs that we should be considering when we're pricing something outside of how many hours did it take you to do, because that's just not a very fair way to be treating specialists, to ask them to, you know, you have to sit at your desk for 8 hours to get paid out in full for this. I don't think that, you know, anyone wants to live in a society where that is the norm.
The thing with time is that it's just one dimensional, right? There are certain tasks that might take a lot of time, but aren't actually providing a ton of value. And there are some tasks that may not take as much time, but are providing a ton of value to the project. And so basically, we have a system where, to Claire's point, we've broken down about 200 different capabilities in a work database, and we've pre-priced those capabilities based on the level of complexity required, the level of time, or the estimated amount of time that it takes, and the level of complexity that goes into doing that task. So from there, we're basically spitting out an average point value, and then that point value is assigned a dollar value. It's a fixed rate. So the organizations are paying $150 a point, and freelancers are earning $100 a point. And we make $50 on each point sold. So we've basically created that system, and then we turned it into technology that enables us to scope complex work really quickly and adjust those prices based on, you know, what the situation is, because certain things and certain projects may be more complex than others, but specific tasks always have sort of like a base value. So we kind of took a page out of the product playbook in that regard, and it really enables people to move faster. It also brings freelancers to the table knowing that they're all earning the same amount per point, which is a huge thing, because a lot of times developers will earn way more than copywriters, but copywriting is so difficult and such a specific skill set. And so in order to really create that collaborative environment, we wanted to make sure that we were pricing the work, not trying to put a price tag on people. And that was something that was really important to us. And so we kind of threw out the old playbook and we sort of created our own. And then we built technology around that that enables us to price in a really transparent way, and in a way that makes sense for people who are really highly specialized and want to come in and do the work and have the flexibility to live their lives at the same time.
It sounds to me like if you do that well, it pays off both in your relationship to your team and to your clients. But if you don't do it well, maybe it could be confusing and difficult. What is your experience in the real world right now?
Basically, when somebody needs a team, it's actually a really simple process. All we do is get on a 30-minute phone call. We get an idea of, hey, you know, what are you trying to get done? What do you want to accomplish? Okay, great. Then we go back and we create like a Wethos action plan, and that gives you that granular breakdown. So it's basically a scope of work like you would get from any other agency. But again, we use points instead of hours. And we explain that very briefly just at the top of the action plan. And then they just get a price breakdown at the end. And then the, you know, steps from there are really to get on the phone, talk a little bit about what kind of team they're looking for, any specific things that we should be watching out for or looking for in our database. And then we curate that team together, get that scope of work signed off on, and kick it off. From there, I think the more complex piece and the piece that we're really focused on right now is making sure that people feel compensated fairly. And so we do tons and tons of feedback loops around our freelancers, asking them, you know, did you feel you were compensated fairly for your time? Did you feel that the project was clear? And just, you know, making sure that we're constantly listening and hearing and making those improvements and optimizations as we go along is really important to us, because I come from a freelance background, and one thing that we do for our freelancers is we guarantee their payments every 30 days while they're on an active team, regardless of when our invoices are being paid. And I can just say, as somebody who has been owed, you know, $20,000 by a big brand, and I can't pay my rent, and I've been waiting the 90-day procurement period because I'm being treated like a vendor, that is extremely stressful. And so we know that when we treat people the best, we tend to attract the best people. And when we're transparent about when they're going to get paid and how much they're going to get paid, they're much happier and they're able to do work and be less worried about whether or not they're going to be able to pay their rent. So for us, it's really about just transparency, clear communication around it, and making the process as simple and easy to digest and understand as possible. And then, of course, constantly gathering that feedback and making sure that we're improving over time.
Can you help me understand sort of the breadth of expertise that you have available to you at this point?
Yeah, so we're mostly concentrated on marketing at the moment. So anything from creative directors in the copy and design space to animators, illustrators, graphic designers, web designers, web developers. We like to segment things by four different team types. You have your brand teams, so branding specialists, website teams, website specialists, growth teams that will help either grow your following or your the people in your newsletter drip, and then content teams. So staff augmentation to work with your director level in-house employees to actually get them the resources they need to execute on the surplus of initiatives that they have planned for the year.
Do you folks, the founders, the sort of inner staff, not the far-flung workers, do you participate in these teams? Are you working on projects or are you mostly just running the business?
So we do in-house, we do everything from like closing the projects, like scoping the projects and getting all that signed off on. And then Your team lead is a Weathos trained team lead, and you also get a Weathos account manager. So the specialists who are executing the work, those are independent specialists. And then the team lead and the account managers are in-house with us. So they sort of are the, they hold the keys to the relationship, to building that trust, to really understanding our organizations and what they need, as well as making sure that the teams are running. And so they're really there to try to make people's lives easier and make sure that we are tracking on everything from staying organized to schedules, to file management, to feedback tracking, all the things that sort of get more chaotic and more complicated as you add more people to the picture. So that's sort of our level of participation. And again, like, we really are hoping to bring the people to the table who are best suited for the project at hand, whereas, you know, we can become sort of that fixed pole, I guess, around where the team sort of comes around us, and people always have that point of contact within Weathos if there are ever any problems.
Totally. And you know, we see all the work that goes out, and I think no matter how big we get, I mean, we used to run all of our own projects ourselves, and now that we have employees, they support here.
We did have some scrappy days.
Yeah, we definitely, I think at one point I was like project managing, doing everything for like 10 teams at once, and it was a lot. But I think there's just no better feeling, just potentially as a creative or someone from the advertising space, than when you see that first round of creative, and it's from an amazing creative director or team that have put together these concepts, and you're just looking through the stack like,
yeah, I'll never forget that moment when we saw our first team and the first round of creative, and we were like, whoa, this is incredible.
And far and beyond anything that we'd even seen in our past lives, our past jobs. And I don't care if we're going to ever be a 500 person company, I'm still going to look at that first round of creative and just feel in awe of the people that we have in our network.
Yeah, we also have, I will say, like, a lot of standardized processes in place and decks and other things for the freelancers to use so that stuff is consistent. And the stuff that we're delivering on is super consistent. So that just, you know, makes sure that expectations are met, and people know what to expect and people know what is expected of them, so that they can come to the table and sort of deliver successfully. And so that, you know, those parts to us are the things that matter most in terms of consistency, which is, you know, is the process consistent? Are the deliverables consistent in terms of expectation? And is the client relationship building consistent so that we can make sure that the quality is there? And then from there, you know, we do think that it's better to have different people around the table for different things. And that's the piece that we want to keep flexible and agile, because that's just the way that the world is moving.
This model for delivering the marketing work, do you think this works well for lots of other service delivery?
We've dreamt about it.
Yeah. you've caught us, but yeah, I do. I think today we do marketing teams, and this is the world we know, and this is the world we come from, but the system we've developed can really expand across anything. And, you know, one day we might be doing product teams. Maybe we'll be doing finance teams. Maybe we'll be doing legal teams. I think that any sort of premium professional service, and we sort of define that as a service that requires more than one person to deliver it, can be done on Weathos in the future. And so our bigger vision here and our hope for the future is that we want to put this technology in the hands of people who come from many different types of skill sets. You know, my dream is to even create a version of this where people can produce music together, which would just be incredible. And when you look at millennials, when you look at Gen Z, I mean, Gen Z is the most entrepreneurial generation yet. 40% of them are already freelancing. Like, they're making money through their Instagram handles. They're just so unbelievably creative and incredible. And this is the type of thing that they're going to be craving. And that's really the audience that we're thinking about as we're building out our platform and our technology, because we want to give people the power to connect professionally and then collaborate with those people to tackle bigger projects and do bigger things. And yes, the answer to that is we do think that this can be expanded beyond just marketing efforts, and we really hope that we're able to get there in the future.
Why did you call it Weathos?
Sure, yeah. So
a big brainstorm board. We spent several days locked in a room.
And then we had our freelancers vote, actually. So we came up with 10 names that we really liked. And then we sent those out, and Weathos just won by a mile because of the play on ethos. And ethos is really the moral thread that ties a community together. And so for us, the big thing is like, we believe the future can't be built alone. And in order to build our future together and move faster, we're going to have to collaborate and we're going to have to work together. And so that idea of having the same set of values and this moral thread that sort of ties a community together can really be applicable not only just for progressive orgs and nonprofits, but, you know, we work with a lot of startups and we work with a lot of B2B companies and a lot of other companies who are sort of ethical enterprises in the way that they operate, not even necessarily with a specific social impact mission. And we just think that, you know, that sort of segment is growing and it's only going to get stronger and stronger, especially as we go through this large generational shift. So Wethos really encapsulates that. And in the end, everything we do, the technology we build, the brand that we have, the name that we have, it's not ours, it's theirs. And we want them to be as involved and feel as part of this community as we are. And we hope in the future to roll things out like a safety net, to partner with people around offering health insurance, other sort of professional development, mentorships, perks, other things like that. We really want to make freelance a more sustainable and a more accessible way to work, where right now, you know, it still can be very stressful for people and anxiety inducing. And we're losing a lot of talent because it's not more accessible. So that's kind of our overarching mission. And when the community speaks, we listen. So we went with Wethos, and all of our branding actually is done by Wethos team. Our website's done by Wethos team. All of our marketing is done by a Wethos team. Like, we certainly eat our own dog food.
Have you thought about sharing equity or having a way for people to earn equity into the company?
Yeah, we've looked into this a bunch, and there are a couple of platforms that are potentially able to facilitate something like this. Right now, just because the team is still pretty small, I mean, we're 16 and just have a lot going on. So really 2020 is going to be a huge year when it comes to community, and equity is definitely one of the areas that we're looking at. In fact, we've been doing a lot of research and talking to different people in the space around like cooperative movements and really just walking the walk instead of just talking the talk. And so, you know, we're looking to 2020, 2021 as a big push around community, and really we're actually hiring a community manager right now, as well as a resource manager. So
come work with us, everyone.
Equity sharing is definitely something that is an ongoing conversation between Claire and I, and we're trying to free up enough sort of time so that we can really focus in on that. And we're hoping that 2020 will be that year.
I was kind of intrigued by something you were saying earlier on about the why versus the what and the how. And I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit more. What did you mean there in terms of a group or a candidate with the why, and how do you tackle that?
The sort of go to when somebody is talking about their, let's say, candidacy, for instance, is to talk about what they're going to do if they get into office and how they're going to get that done. And those things are super, super important. Don't get me wrong, right? Like, what are your policies? What are you trying to represent? What do you care about? What kinds of things are you going to push forward? And tell us how you're going to be able to get that done. How are you going to work with other people to actually make things happen, which is one of the biggest frustrations a lot of people have with politics. But the thing that tends to be missing is the why. And the reason that that's missing is because the why doesn't come down to the candidate themselves. The why comes down to their audience. And it's sort of natural as a person or a brand or a company to talk about what you do and yourself and, you know, come work with us and this is what we do and da, da, da. And like, everything sort of inadvertently becomes about you. But the why is really about the customer or the voter or the person that you're trying to reach. And so what policies they have, how those policies are going to get done are important, but why should the voters care about them? How does this affect their everyday lives? What are you going to do that's different so that people are going to feel like they're going to trust you? And how are you going to actually communicate that message to them? And if you're missing the why, then you sort of are missing that emotional piece. And people lead with their emotions. They make decisions with their emotions, and they want to feel like something really speaks to them. That's why we really focus in that area. And so much of creativity is tapping into the why, pulling on the heartstrings, resonating with people and hitting them really with a message that they're going to understand. And that feels like, you know, this person gets me. And this person gets my life and my situation.
It's what the Bernie campaign just mastered.
AOC masters this.
Yeah, too. It's emotional. And you have to figure out, why are you running? You're not just running because I want to keep my job in politics. Like, you're running for a bigger purpose, a new world.
I think the three questions we try to answer is why this, why now, and why you? And those are three things that if you really think deeply about them, they can turn into really great pieces of communication that are really going to reach people.
When you look at the other contenders in the Democratic nomination for president space, who do you think might be getting close to getting that why right?
I don't know. I actually don't know Claire's opinion on this, so I'm really interested to hear it. I think Elizabeth Warren is doing great at this. I think she is getting really, really good at taking complicated policy issues and breaking them down in a way that make Americans understand them, not only understand them, but also feel like they are understood by her and that their problems are understood and that they feel heard. And I think that she's really starting to ramp up. And I've seen over the course of the last year that she's gotten better and better and better at doing this. And it's showing. I mean, it's showing in the polls. She's been a really, really strong contender in, focusing in on that area of making people feel understood.
You know, I kind of wish you would have answered with something else because I'm a huge Warren fan as well. Warren does a really great job at breaking through the misinformation and focusing people on the true issues at the heart and then talking through the why that is the true issue and then what we're going to do about it. I mean, she's doing the best job at just focusing us on like, what are the real issues that we're going to tackle? And, you know, she's doing the best at making us see a vision of a new world with her as president.
Is there a question that you wish I had asked that I haven't?
No, I mean, this was great. We went really deep on things and it's nice to be able to talk about sort of like the deeper tech in the background and other things that are sort of going on in the background that we don't usually lead with, to be honest, because at the end of the day, again, like this is exactly what we're trying to articulate, which is like, why should people care about what we're doing? Well, people care about the teams and the people. And in the end of the day, like, yeah, we're a tech company, but we're really a people company. And the tech is just what enables us. And so it's fun to dive into that kind of stuff. And you know, I appreciate being able to talk about it for sure, because I find it very interesting. And I'm sure other people will too. But it's just not something that we like tend to sort of lead with. So I've been really happy with being able to dive a little bit deeper in those areas. And we appreciate a conversation. And we're hoping that this reaches the right folks. And if they need help, you know, truly, we're just a phone call away.
I've noticed that you've gotten quite a lot of press in major newspapers and the like. How are you generating that?
Owethos PR team.
We use our own teams. We eat our own dog food.
But yeah, we have an outreach team.
Well, that may be your answer to most questions.
You're only as good as your people. And that's like something we so strongly stand by. And I think another point, and I know we didn't talk about this too deep in terms of like the type of talent that we have in, but the diversity of talent is important. Incredibly, incredibly important. The best teams are the most diverse because it's all about seats at the table. And it goes back to you need to have people that are experts in the political space, but at the same table, you should have people with other points of view in order to progress and move forward and really kind of have new ways of thinking by bringing in outsiders.
A lot of the articles that I glanced at noted that you're female founders and that there are special challenges that come with trying to raise money and trying to get respect, I guess.
Honestly, it's kind of a breath of fresh air that like we are founders and we're starting a company and we also happen to be women. It's interesting. You think about female founders, they're typically starting companies. There's a lot of companies that are aimed at women, run by women, which is incredibly important. Those should be run by women. But we are starting something agnostic of your gender, right? Like, of course, we have tons and tons of women in our network, in our community, as specialists and as clients. But at the end of the day, diversity is where we're leaning into and what we think is really important. And, you know, we're starting a company that is for the people, not for one specific gender or, you know, identification of people.
The hardest part to me about leading a company, I guess, as a woman is just reminding myself to trust myself. And that's really the advice that I give a lot of women, which is you're smarter and you're better than you think you are. And with a world that sort of tells you that you're not qualified or you're not good enough or you're an imposter, it can be really hard to believe that sometimes. And the worst mistakes that we've made, I think, and I think Claire would agree with this, are times when we didn't trust our gut and trust ourselves. And instead, we listened to outside voices that maybe we knew deep down were wrong, but we trusted them for some reason over our own voices. So that's really like what it comes down to, you know, day in and day out is just trusting myself and believing in that and continuing to learn and allowing myself to fail and allowing myself to make mistakes and allowing myself to keep taking chances because I tend to be a lot more patient with other people than I am with myself. And I think it's important to just recognize that and give ourselves a break every once in a while. And of course, like there are a bunch of statistics that I could rattle off right now about, you know, venture capital and how it's basically a miracle that we got funding.
Less than 4% of venture capital last year went to all women founders. We aren't just one woman founder. We are all women.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a bunch of that. And but the thing that I don't want to happen is I don't want women to be discouraged from entering the space. And statistics aside, like, do the thing, you know, if you've been thinking about it, just get started. I actually host founder office hours a couple Friday mornings a month remotely. So I mentor a lot of different female founders. And that's very accessible if people want to email me and chat. If there are any women out there who are trying to get their company off the ground, I am absolutely happy to talk to you. I encourage more people to do it. I would hate to see the statistics discourage people, and it is possible and you can do it. And we're so incredibly lucky to have the opportunity to build our dream, really. And that is something that I am so unbelievably grateful for and that I remind myself of every single day, no matter how hard it gets, which is just the fact that we get to do this and give it a real try. And have the resources to do so and the funding to do so is just an absolutely incredible opportunity. And I'm happy to help out if anybody out there is thinking about this and wants to talk.
That seems like a good note on which to end. Claire and Rachel, it's been an honor to talk to you today. Anything else you want to say?
No. Thank you so much for having us. We really enjoyed the conversation and we're looking forward to staying in touch, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're ever in New York, let's grab a coffee.
That was Rachel Rennick and Claire Humphreys. They are at wethos.co. I hope that the work of Wethos helps move the progressive team forward. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.